This is your brain.
Remember this.
This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs.
The catchiest piece of agitprop from the heyday of the war on drugs.
Any questions?
Marijuana advocates have always argued that the much more dangerous drug is for sale at your local liquor store and supermarket. But it's hard to imagine American culture without either booze or now pot. From Louis Armstrong, a prolific marijuana smoker, to Ernest Hemingway, a heroic drinker. We asked producer Michael May to look into how America's two favorite drugs affect the creative mind.
Have you ever held a glass of bourbon up to the setting sun?
Jason White is a Nashville-based singer-songwriter and whiskey connoisseur.
You should try that sometime. It makes a lovely amber light. I think it's my favorite color.
White works on his songs in the sober light of day, but the lyrics don't really start flowing until the bourbon does.
I make a point of trying not to drink before the cocktail hour ever. That's just a line I don't like to cross. But most of my productivity occurs after the sun goes down, and I'll sit down on the porch and I'll pour myself a glass of bourbon. That's when the magic seems to happen. And I think it's, you know, a matter of being really loose, relaxed, and being in a place where no one can hear me if I just scream total nonsense at the top of my lungs until some words start to take shape and make sense.
Bourbon rain falling on my roof.
Drinking and playing music go back a long time. The first evidence of fermented beverages was found at a 9,000-year-old archaeological site in China, alongside some of the oldest intact musical instruments. Jason White started on both pretty young. He wrote his first drunken song at 15, after guzzling a Colt 45. And later, he formed a hard-drinking band called the Janglers. You know the type.
Our roadie was instructed to have a shot of Jim Beam and a Rolling Rock on top of my amplifier at all times, you know.
But if alcohol is a muse, it's kind of an unruly one.
What we know about what alcohol does to the brain is that it primarily inhibits brain activity. That would sound like maybe not a good thing for creativity, and in a lot of ways that's true.
Harvard professor and neurologist Alice Flaherty wrote a book called The Midnight Disease about writers and writer's block.
When your alcohol level first starts to rise, the first thing that it inhibits is some of the inhibitory systems.
And that's why that first shot of whiskey at sunset feels so good.
People start feeling maybe a little euphoric or excited, and they might be more active for a little while. That's usually as your blood alcohol is rising, and you can't really keep that going.
Jason White hit a wall in the early 90s. His best friend and bandmate committed suicide. His girlfriend of 3 years dumped him. He holed up in a cabin for 6 months with a supply of bourbon and red wine.
It was a terrible, terrible time in my life, and my head was full of tough stuff, tough memories.
Dr. Flaherty says it's not just a cliche that we drink to forget.
Memory and creativity have a very complicated interaction. There are a few studies that show that decreasing your memory, shutting it off, can be helpful.
When I'm in that process and when I'm going through a phase like that, I'm drinking to stop the noise in my head so I can express what I'm feeling in my heart.
The songs White wrote in the cabin were bought by a major label, and now he's got a good career as a songwriter. But he's worried that if he stopped drinking, he'd never be able to write another song. And that might be true.
There have been a bunch of studies showing that alcohol doesn't actually help creativity. What it does is it lowers your judgment so that you think what you're writing is more creative. It reminds me a little of William Stafford, who said that all you have to do to get rid of writer's block is just lower your standards. But, you know, that's the legitimate thing in that if you're judging your work less harshly, you may actually feel more liberated to produce it.
It's hard to want to get out and just air your dirty laundry in front of a bunch of people, you know?
But here's a funny thing. White's biggest success wasn't written while he was drinking. Years ago, a friend left a marijuana bud on his coffee table. He wasn't a pot smoker, but he popped it in a corncob pipe, lit it up, and in 40 minutes wrote a song called Red Ragtop. It was a huge hit for Tim McGraw.
I was 20 and she was 18. We were just about as wild as we were green in the ways of the world.
She picked me up in that red rag top. We were free of the folks, hiding from the cops on a summer night.
Dr. Flaherty says scientists are only beginning to understand how marijuana actually works in the brain.
One of the important aspects of creative attention, it's often hyper-focused in certain ways, and yet you have to be able to pay attention to relevant things that you're not expecting. Marijuana seems to help that focus.
Scientists are studying whether pot helps with divergent thinking, the free associative, idea-generating state that's considered an index for creativity.
There's a study that shows that it helps it. There's another study that says that it doesn't have an effect and maybe even makes it worse.
They're inconclusive partly because it's so hard to study creativity. The experiments might ask you to find a link between a series of words, like cottage, Swiss, and cake. And if you're stoned, then maybe you already know the answer is cheese. Of course, artists have been conducting their own experiments on pot and creativity for generations. Fred Tomaselli is a well-respected painter who's incorporated actual drugs into his collage-like paintings, including marijuana leaves.
So there was this funny conversation that I was having with pot at that point in my life, and I think it did ultimately inform the imagery and the sensibility of the work.
His early pieces are more geometric, minimalist. But as he started coming into his own as an artist in the 80s, he began to explore the synergism between art and drugs in a more intentional way. His work became more ornate and complex. His collages burst with swirling colors and images of nature, birds, insects, the cannabis leaves themselves. He's kind of a late-blooming psychedelic artist.
I think a lot of the psychedelic art was kind of packaged by hippie culture, and then I was just a consumer of it before I even actually took psychedelic drugs or smoked pot. In a lot of respects, it kind of maybe influenced what the experience was supposed to be like.
That raises a question. Is there something about the 60s aesthetic, those intricate patterns, the groove-heavy music, that's actually caused by the effects of pot? Tomaselli thinks it is.
You know, I think this idea of like kind of repetitious, say, mark-making, that's the hallmark of stoners and outsider artists. There's something that marijuana has that allows that kind of activity to come to the forefront, create these rhythms, visual rhythms for the mind.
So how do alcohol and marijuana compare? Alcohol might put you in a creative state for a little while, silencing your inner critic and your bad memories. But pretty quickly, your work is going to deteriorate. Marijuana can help with attention and focus, but it makes some people lose motivation. What if you could boost creative thinking without the side effects and health hazards? Alice Flaherty is working with a brain stimulation treatment that doesn't involve drugs at all. There's just one small drawback.
The kind that I use with my patients involves a surgical implantation of electrodes, and most people aren't that fond of creativity that they would be willing to mess with that.
You can imagine the sci-fi scenarios, but I think it's safe to say that for now, the artistic set will probably stick with their bourbon and bongs. For Studio 360, I'm Michael May.
What about you? Have you ever accomplished anything great, creative or otherwise, as a result of using pot or alcohol? Leave us a comment at studio360.org.